Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. It seems like a never-ending test of wills between parent and child. Kids expecting parents to supply iPhones, video games, cars, and computers, or even spending money. Parents expecting kids to pitch in to help with the chores, and neither side satisfied with the outcome. Dr. Wes Crenshaw says that today's teens feel entitled for a good reason. We've just given them way too much stuff. But it really doesn't have to be that way. How to get your child into a real economy today on our show. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is a board-certified family psychologist. He writes the weekly Double Take advice column for teens and parents in the Lawrence Journal World. His new book, titled I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD, comes out next month, and we'll be talking about that topic in May when Dr. Wes Crenshaw comes back. And Wes, always good to have you. Welcome great. To the show.
Yeah. Just great to be here.
Now, you wrote in last week's column that when their kids are still in the womb, far too many parents reach up and hand the moon and stars down to their kids. As a rule, however, you know, getting kids whatever they want nearly always backfires, it seems to me, for everyone involved. That seems so intuitively true. How do parents wind up getting into that cycle to begin with?
I think it starts out really young, and there are kind of two problems you'll see. One of them is that parents sort of see their kids as trophies. They see them as their...
Unlike my parents.
Yeah. Yeah. we're going to talk about
that. Not
quite
a trophy.
Yeah. It's very generational. We're going to talk about that. I was raised by Depression-era parents. And
as was I.
And we, in our generation, I'm 51, parents saw kids, well, at that time as, you know, labor force when they grew up. But later on, they didn't see them as a trophy. They just saw them as, you know, gifts from heaven or something. I hope my mom, who's probably listening, felt that way. But nowadays, it's sort of like you have a Lexus and three kids, and the three kids have a Lexus or hand-me-down Lexus or something.
Lexi,
yes. Yeah. Or you will get the people who really did grow up poor. I have quite a few of those, I see, and then they, you know, struggled by the sweat of their brow, went to college, graduate school, or lawyers, or doctors, or whatever, and they have the most astonishing reattribution of their success. They say, I don't want my kid to go through what I did, and that is, I just stare blankly at them and said, yet that is why you are who you are, and they look kind of astonished. So then they've spent all this money. Both of those groups of people spend tremendous amount of money on kids who then experience what we all refer to now as a generation of entitlement.
Well, why did this generation of parents sort of wind up this way? I mean, I sort of wonder and marvel about it myself as I look around my contemporaries and think, you know, we are so different from our parents. We have given our kids so much, and it just seems like that is sort of how the world spins these days.
I can give you the example I give my kids. I admit this is a lie, but I like to tell it. So my kids will purchase a new Wii or something with their money, as we will talk about later. And I will say, well, you know, in my day, kids, we didn't have fancy things like this. I only had sticks and leaves to play with. Now, I say that's a kind of partially true. Sticks and leaves were a lot of fun to play with, but I had a few other little toys. But nothing like what kids have today. And I think parents, the way kids have been raised exists in about a 3 or 4 decade era in which there was a lot of prosperity in this country at really every level and a tremendous amount, perhaps more importantly, of open credit. Mm-hmm. That's what blew us into the recession, of course, and it really hasn't completely remitted. When you have a lot of credit, you can spend a lot of money.
Yeah, okay. Well, you see this as a much bigger problem than just whether the cat box gets cleaned and who winds up doing it. Do I have that right?
Yeah. You get people that come in, and it's very common. It's nearly a weekly event, and they're very frustrated with their teenager. And their teenager will not load the dishwasher, and they will not clean out the cat box, and they will not vacuum or whatever task needs to be done. And I usually say to them, well, what is motivating for the child about a clean cat box? And then they will frequently go into a description of all of the things they have bought for the child. They're in club soccer. They are. They have the car. They have their uniforms for practice. Whatever it is that they are buying for the kid. And I say, right. And how did that connect with the cat box? And they say, well, you know, we do so much for him or her. We expect him to make a contribution to the home. And on the surface, that kind of sounds logical, like we're all, you know, working together for a greater good. But that just isn't how teenagers or kids are wired. Littler kids are, but teenagers are not. They like you and I, want to see contingency. They want to see a paycheck for the work that they do. And so if you say clean the cat box and I'll put $5 in your account, and then you don't buy them anything, so the $5 has value, that gets us from here to there a whole lot faster.
So you recommend what then when it comes to juggling this expectation of work around the house with the money we end up giving them for God, goodness knows everything these days?
I recommend that you start when they're young and never let them find out that other kids get things for free. I have been able to...
You can't help that, though.
It is hard, but I've been able to sort of isolate. My kids are just catching on now, and they're 10 and 17. They're just beginning to notice that other people somehow have gotten things for free because it's foreign to them. And no matter what your wealth or poverty, the more you link what it is you wish to have happen, and we'll, during the hour, give lots of examples of that, to some kind of reward system, the better off you're going to be. And we used to use the term in behaviorism, a token economy, meaning you'd get a star or a poker chip or something. I forget about the tokens. Everybody understands what a quarter is worth or a dollar or five. And you can assign money to a lot of those tasks and get kids to do a whole lot of work.
So you're saying there's a direct relationship between the work they do and the amount of money they should get for it. You're paying them for work around the house.
Well, I'm saying that's what you should do, because if you don't link all of your free gifts directly to some performance that you want in your kids, whether it is grades or even the treatment of others in an ethical way or homework or cat boxes or whatever it may be, if you don't link that directly, then kids from a very early age do not make a linkage to what it means to participate in an economy. So they're less motivated to actually be earners, and we see this going right through to college.
So you're saying you even link how kids treat other kids to money?
I would link that above all else.
Now, really?
Well, and I agree this is actually a little more complicated to do than, you know, you can't pay a person a dollar for every time they're kind to someone. But you can, if they are, you can restrict what they do based on how they treat others. If you find out, we talked about bullying one time in the past, if you find out your kid is bullying someone, I probably would put them on shutdown for a while, because pretty seriously on shutdown, because that's psychopathic behavior and you don't want to reinforce that.
Right.
And likewise, you could restrict their spending during that time. If you are, and there's a different, whole different system we'll talk about that you can use for budgeting. I might cut into their budget for that if they have a budget for purchases.
Now, a lot of folks listen to this and you know, would relate to my own experience, which was my mom and dad said, well, I'm not going to pay you for mowing our lawn because no one's paying me, meaning my dad, for mowing our lawn. We're all expected to pitch in this house, and that's how we roll here. You will mow the lawn. And so I mowed the lawn. Didn't do it very happily sometimes, but I used to mow the lawn. And what about that aspect of all this? We're all in this together. We're a family. Everyone pitches in, and no one gets paid for what they do, or mom or dad would be taking all the money, and the kids wouldn't have very much.
What do you think motivated you to do that, Steve? Let's analyze this deeply.
Yeah.
Let's do therapy and Steve. What do you think got you to do that?
To mow the grass?
Yeah.
My father would say, you're going to mow the grass.
And he had
today.
He had legitimate power. He was that you just did as he bid you.
Well, yes.
Okay.
That's just how it worked at my house.
Well, okay. Now, if that works, I don't want to take that away from anybody. Did your parents, how did your parents divvy out the goodies? Did they have a budget for you? Were there not a lot of goodies to give?
Well, there weren't a lot of goodies to give. I mean, yours truly had a paper out by the time he was in fifth grade, and that's where the goodies came from. When I came of age, I was working for it, and the big thrill was to do the paper out and then get an Orange Crush and sit down at the gas station, this Ohio gas station in Kettering, Ohio, and read the sports page. Cy Burke and all those guys. That's what I did.
It really was a quiet day in Lake Wobegon.
Yes. Well, it was yeah. Kettering, Ohio. Yeah.
See, you already had...
How am I screwed up?
Yeah. It's
here it comes.
How does that make you feel, Steve? No. Yeah. You already had a sense of participation in an economy. So it's okay that you were expected to do things around the house. I don't have any problem with that. Our cat box does get cleaned, and I don't happen to pay for it. But the understanding is that's the only way we're going to keep the cats. That's clearly understood. But if your kid is getting lots of free stuff and you tell them, well, go mow the lawn, and they don't make any connection, as most kids don't, that's today where things go wrong. It's less about having the expectations that you had in your home and I had mine, and more about giving away everything and then expecting someone to want to participate when they're already getting all their needs met. The term is contingencies.
I get that. Well, let's get our listeners involved here. What about all this? Should we reward our kids for everything they do correctly, or should some things be done simply because it's the right thing to do? How do you manage things in your household? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. Give us a call and tell us how you manage your kids and money at your home these days. For a lot of parents these days, it seems to be a little different in the sense that, you know, the cell phone seems to be as important to a kid as their left hips. You don't have a left hip, you're not going to school. You got to have a cell phone these days. And the ante seems to be raised in terms of what the expectation is for a parent in terms of what he or she offers their kids.
Oh, boy, are you opening the can of worms.
Yeah.
You are so right, because cell phones have two, let's just call them smartphones, because the majority of kids have those. They have two economic properties, wholly apart from their ethical use, which is another issue. They have the purchase price, which is ostensibly about $99, but of course is much more than that,
right,
because you have to sign the contract.
Right.
And then they have the ongoing, not only the cellular plan, but the data plan that goes with it. And parents have gotten into a difficult bind. Because on one hand, the convenience of having that personal communication device on your child, being able to call them, check in on them, and if you so wish, track them pretty easily at this point, cannot be argued. But the other half of the smartphone, what it can now do with its data plan and its access to internet and Twitter and Facebook and everything else, is the luxury portion of that for kids. So it is unwise for parents to just hand that phone over and hand over the plan without the kids making some economic contribution to that plan.
And how do you expect them to do that, Wes? What's your two cents?
You mean in terms of how they earn the money to do it?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, there are two ways you can go with this. Either the plan that we were talking about a few minutes ago, where you have the young person doing some specific tasks that – and I don't even call it an allowance. I'd rather call it a salary, because it's a paid contingency like we get paid. And the kid earns the money and then spends the money, preferably actively, like writes the check or makes the transfer or whatever. So they're preparing themselves to really pay bills when they get on their own. It's a controlled system. The other way to do it, if you don't want to do – and this works better for some kids – if you don't want to do a per dish – payment plan, per dishwashing payment plan, for heaven's sakes, at least set up a budget. And I have done this a lot, where rather than the child calling you up and saying, I need money for pizza night, next night it's I need money for a uniform.
Right, that's my household.
There you go. Calculate what it costs for your kid to exist, and either give them the money to pay for everything per month, preferably on one of those debit cards you buy at Walmart or Dillon's, not the ones that directly link to a bank account, because those are fraud, are easy to lose to fraud. But you give that to them, and then that's their monthly stipend. And you
so you're teaching them right out of the gate how to manage and handle money.
That is exactly right. And okay. how to not run out of it by the 21st of the month.
Yeah.
And then you must be very explicit in describing what they have to buy. Does it include tampons? Does it include toothpaste? Mm-hmm. Does it include clothes? And you can go either way. You just have to raise or lower the budget in order to make that work.
Let's get, again, our listeners, the question on the table here, should we reward our kids for everything they do correctly, or should some things be done simply just because it's the right thing to do? You hand them the cell phone because they need cell phones these days. How do you handle cell phones in your house? 816-235-2888. Let's go to some calls here, and Heather from up in Liberty. Heather, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Thanks Heather.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
Hi. I would just like to say that to your guest, I feel so vindicated now because, you know, I had tried, I've read so many books and I've heard so many parents talk about children should just do, you know, what's right for the family. That's how we were raised in the 70s. And that was the common that we just feared our parents' corporal punishment. You know, it wasn't
right.
abusive. It was just, you know, a lot of threats and guilt or whatever, you know, real traditional. And now it's nice to be able to say, okay, you know, I can set my child up on sort of like a payment system or wages, if you prefer, and actually tie that to the work that they are doing.
Very much so. Then I'll give you an example because my poor kids always get used on the show as examples. Every week, including yesterday, my son Alex, who started doing this at 9 and is 10 now, comes into the office and he and I work on my book and whatever I'm working on, and he cleans the office. He that stinky trash, and he says, "Daddy, I just don't understand why you have so many waste baskets." And I will explain why in my book next month.
Yeah, I was going to say, why do you have so many waste baskets? You have an issue we haven't talked about here?
Yeah, because the people with ADD, if you don't get a waste basket in a short span, they'll stick their tissues in your couch. So we have lots of waste baskets, and he has to empty them all. And, you know, it's a week's worth of stuff people have left, and it doesn't smell good. And I have an office cat, and he has to clean her cat box, and he has to do all vacuum. And sometimes he doesn't want to. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't care. And he comes in and he does it, and he gets paid. And he buys his Wii, and he buys his games, and he bought this Skylanders Portal of Power starter pack thingamajig, and he handles all of that. And I think that...
Can I ask a question
sure.
about that as well? Sorry to interrupt.
No.
I don't know anything about Skylanders. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. Do you have his particular system set up on paper? Because with the ADD kids, I can really, it's nice to have a list. They like checking those things off.
You are smart.
But it's a little tedious for me because I also have ADD and I don't like to keep up with stuff.
I have a great book you're going to want to read really badly.
Right.
It's blue with white lettering. Next month, be here and we'll talk about, I think it's the 12th, we're going to talk all about that. Yes, lists, great lists are great for kids. And anyway, he actually has, it is so funny you ask that. He actually has a list that has little boxes on it we made, so he makes sure he remembers each thing he's supposed to do. And then occasionally I'll add something to the list, like clean the magazine rack. And he checks it off and puts in his hours, and I turn that in, and we get him paid. But, yeah,
awesome.
Lists are great. And he is also an ADD guy and does a very fine job focusing on his work.
Great. Thank you so much.
Heather, I'm glad you called. Good luck.
Yeah, have a great day, guys.
Yeah, bye-bye. How to teach your kids about how to handle money. How did you teach your kids to be financially responsible? Tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. You can also email us UpToDate@KCUR.org. Let's go to Lou from Lawrence. Lou, you're on UpToDate.
Anything that Wes has to say. I'm a child of the person who are parents. And, you know, I strongly believe, and I'm a parent of two adult children, I strongly believe that if you want your children to create a healthy economy for themselves into adulthood, you need to do the same at home. I need to show them how you do things, whether it's you know, token economy or and modeling the behavior and explain to them why with the rationale. And I think a lot of parents these days just blow it off. They have low, you know, they have relatively low impulse control and they have the means. And there you go, lousy models.
And I think that there was a little breakup in the call, but he's basically saying if you want to have your kids participate in an economy as adults, you have to start showing them how to do that at home, which I absolutely agree with. And there are little things like this. We were talking earlier about the running out of money problem. 100% of the time when I get kids on a budget system, they will run out of money early. And the parent, I have to handcuff the parents, not
to bail them
rescue
out.
Them. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting. Kids come at this differently. You sit everybody down in the room and you say, here's what we're going to do. And you've got the parents okay ahead of time. And we're going to give you this budget, and it's going to be $400. And first the kid is like, oh, my gosh, that's amazing, because they have absolutely no idea that the parents have been paying $600.
It's vacation time in March.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's one set. And then the others who are more savvy, you say, oh, we're going to have this budget. You're going to get this card. It's going to be $400. And they go, wait a minute. I'm only 15. I shouldn't have to be an adult yet. And you're like, yeah, that's how we're going to do it. And they realize that this is going to benefit the parent, if you will, in the sense that it will put a limit and a boundary down for what is spent. And some kids think that's pretty neat, and some of them think it's pretty terrible.
I mean, how do you go about determining how much the amount is? Because, you know, from month to month, at least it seems to me, the expenses in my household when it comes to Michael, my 15-year-old, you know, varies pretty dramatically.
If you want to really do it right, you have to figure it out over a year, because there's going to be a time when there are, for instance, soccer payments that have
to be made.
And there are times when maybe if you pay insurance quarterly or something, that you have to be ready to do that. And I will admit, in fairness, the handcuffing comment notwithstanding, sometimes parents do have to help a little in the training phase of this. Mm-hmm. If the kid is legitimately
taking a serious interest in doing what he has to do. So you have your sons and daughters, they actually pay fees for sports at school, the whole thing.
Now, I actually don't do it that way. That's too much for my kids to keep track of. But they're on the earn-as-you-go system. So anything that they purchase that's fun for them, and in fact, they've earned enough money at this point that I think that in future travels we go to, they're probably going to have to buy their tickets into some things. Travel has not ever been on the list of things they have to buy.
Right.
And they now are making enough money that I suspect they're going to have to buy, you know, Six Flags tickets or some things like that, because that we've reorganized it. But under the system where families have the kid on a budget, you can either have it be total, where they're down to their toiletries, or you can have it just be a smaller amount of money that's more fun money, or you can start with one and work your way toward the other as they get older and become more capable of managing.
Because if you go the full Monty there, that's a lot of numbers and a lot of, you know, at our house, expenses seem to sort of pop up.
Right.
Oh, we have a thing, you know, I have $10 due for this thing in class that, you know, none of us knew about a week previous.
Well, and I'm always torn about this. And
real life's that way, too.
That you beat me to it. That's exactly where I was headed. I'm torn about this because on one hand, this is a training phase. We're not trying to toss the kids off the cliff into the volcano. We're trying to teach them how to be safe with the volcano of finance. But on the other hand, stuff pops up. And what you might do if you have formed a good financial relationship with your child is if something like that pops up, you do advance them the money. I say that with hesitancy in my voice because too often advanced money is pretty much a gift.
It's a gift and it doesn't get returned.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Teaching kids how to handle money is our topic here today. 816-235-2888. Let's grab one more call before a break here. Christine from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Good to have you, Christine.
I disagree in very many ways about the monetary system. I know that as a child, I did have a clothing allowance, and I think that that was a good thing to do. But I'm a teacher, and I truly believe that when you pay children to do what's right. You're robbing them of the satisfaction that they feel for doing things that are right when no one is watching, just because they're right. And I found that to be a very successful way to handle things.
What when you refer to something as being right, what are you thinking about there?
All the way from being responsible with money to not doing drugs to doing their classroom jobs, or with my own children, their children's jobs.
Well, I think the problem is being responsible with money is sort of what we're talking about. And if kids aren't given a chance when they're younger to really do that actively, they don't really develop those kinds of skills later on. So the lesson is in the participation in that economic system. And I think it varies from kid to kid what kind of participation they need. But I would, and I'm not sure you're quibbling with this, but I would argue pretty strongly that just giving kids a bunch of things and then stepping back and expecting right. them to learn lessons from that's probably not sure. very likely to happen.
Very true. Very true. Not going to happen. And we do give our children way too much. It's really hard not to bail them out. It's really hard not to buy them anything you didn't have.
Well, and
I know that, but
yeah. In the second half of the show, I believe we'll probably get into how this works with young adults, too, because I have people whose kids are 28 and 29, and they are having roughly the same relationship with them financially that they had when they were 14.
Not good.
No.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking my call. I really don't want to punish kids with rewards, and I think that that's sometimes what happens
yeah.
if we're paying them for things.
Christine, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I mean, again, the concern here that some folks are going to have, Wes, is that you're going to be raising kids to be expecting to be rewarded for everything they do when so much of what we do every day is not rewarded.
Yeah, I'll tell you what the literature on that is, that if you reward something that's internally motivated, then the internal motivation ceases to be present. And that's pretty much what Christine is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I was wanting to hear kind of more what she thought about what it means to do something right. And I think that if you pay somebody to quit being a bully, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But if you cut their budget because they're bullying people, to me that makes some sense. You're reinforcing the behaviors you like and punishing the behaviors you don't like.
But still, you're tying behavior to money when you know, in fact, so much of, again, what we do, you know, shouldn't have anything to do with money, should it? Why money?
Well, hopefully I'll tell you why money is, because it talks.
It hurts.
It hurts, exactly.
Yeah.
And when you have the cell phone, for example, this cell phone situation, which we could and have done shows about that alone. If you are paying for the child to operate their cell phone and they are
abusing the cell phone.
Exactly. They're tweeting mean things to people and they're putting up mean group texts to everybody. You can take the cell phone away, which is like the nuclear bomb of discipline.
It is the nuclear bomb.
It is the thermonuclear warfare of teenageness right now to do that.
But the problem is a teenager, if we're getting off on a tangent here, but a teenager cannot function in today's society without that
right.
cell phone. They will melt down, go to ground zero, and they're done.
Right.
Their life ends.
And so,
I'm exaggerating only a little bit. Yeah.
And again, it is a slight tangent, but it's still back to this issue of how do you reinforce good behavior so it fits. If you cut off their data plan for a few months or a few weeks, that makes a statement. They still have their texting and they still have their voice system, but they cannot access the offending system on their phone. And I understand that's sort of the conventional carpet bombing of teenageness. It's not as bad as the nuclear option. But if someone's bullying, I don't mean they're just on, you know, as we've talked in previous episodes, surf and porn or something, you can deal with that how you see fit. But when they're harming somebody with their phone, that's pretty serious action.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our very good conversation here about teaching kids how to manage money. We'll talk in our second half about the post-high school kids and how they factor into all of this. Again, our number, 816-235-2888. Eliza, Sharon, and Shannon, hang on. We'll get to your calls after a break. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. On our program this hour, we're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw about how to teach our kids how to manage money. Wes Crenshaw is a board-certified family psychologist. He writes the weekly Double Take Advice column in the Lawrence Journal World. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Lots of phone calls here. Let's keep them coming. Let's go to Eliza from Lawrence. Eliza, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
My question is, I have a 7 and a 9-year-old boy, both of whom right now receive a weekly allowance, but they also have responsibilities for participating in the upkeep of our house.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is there a difference between having the salary versus the allowance? Are they tied together, or how do you recommend dealing with that for the age of my kids?
Yeah, yeah. Great question.
Yeah, great question, Eliza.
The short answer is that typically an allowance means that you are giving kids money to spend. And what I term a salary or wages or a stipend or whatever is given in response to certain tasks. Now, that's more than a matter of semantics, but if your kids don't know the difference, and if you're docking them or not paying them if they don't do the work, then I think that makes the connection. But you have to really deliberately make that connection. My kids know if they don't work, money doesn't flow.
How do you handle that in your household, Eliza, if the kids don't work, what Dr. Wes is saying?
You know, they are quote-unquote paid in a different way for doing their work. They have to get their chores done in order to have any screen time during the day. So that's the motivating factor for them. If they don't do the work, then they don't get the screen time. You know, sometimes that's motivating, sometimes that's not. But the consequence of no screen time is there. So
that definitely works, especially for boys in your kids' age range. And the only thing I would say is that as they continue to get a little bit older, just think about the goal being to get them participating in an economy. If you want to get them to behave, if you have the power of screen time, use it. I could not agree more. Screen time to me is a dessert. It's the thing we do after everything else has been accomplished. And so you're using it effectively that way. Too many people don't. And if you don't get that right now, like you're doing it very well, when they get to be teenagers and you start trying to shut down the Wi-Fi, that's the other nuclear option. It really gets ugly. So you're doing good on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Eliza, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Sharon from Kansas City, Missouri. Sharon, you're on Up to Date. Our guest today, Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Good morning.
I would like to say something about a teenager. I had a 14-year-old daughter, and I had to have the house painted. I saved $500, and she knew it. I made her scrape off the outside of the paint, and at the time, I could measure how much she had done by the time I got home from work. And the neighbors could see what she was doing at 14 years old. And she said to me, maybe 15 years later, I had taught her how to really work. She had an opportunity to go to France and work on an archaeological dig, and she was successful in this. And I will say my parents' attitude was, you live here, you work here.
Okay.
And so who paid for the France trip?
She had a scholarship.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
And so did she connect? Now, I think I understood what you were saying. You're saying that you didn't actually pay her to do the work, but she did it?
No.
You did
she
pay
knew.
Her?
Nope. No, I did not pay her. She knew how much she was saving for the household.
Hmm. And how long ago was this?
Oh, in the 80s.
Yeah.
The 90s.
Do you think that she benefited from that indirectly? Like, you guys had a little more money to do something she enjoyed.
Oh, yes.
And did she make that connection?
Yes.
That's as long. The issue is the connection. If you're working hard and if your daughter's working hard and she sees this lets us go on a vacation or, you know, have some spending money for movies or something, and she can really connect that work to the saving of money and the using of money, I think you've had her participating in the economy. The problem is too many people don't make any connection with that. The gifts flow whether or not they do anything. And so I think you made a good connection there for her, and it did teach her exactly the lesson we're talking about today.
Hmm. Yes, exactly.
All right, Sharon. Good call. I'm glad you made it. Thank you. Okay, let's go to Shannon from Independence. Shannon, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, how are you doing?
Well, thanks, Shannon.
I have a question. How do you keep from the grandparents from sabotaging your efforts?
Such a good point.
Really good point.
I didn't even think to bring it up.
How do you come about it or confront them in a nice way?
Yeah.
I should say.
Confront your own kids, the grandparents.
Confront the grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give some context to what he's saying because it's so smart.
That's a great point.
You get these parents lined up and they are doing this system, whether it's the budgeting system or the pay-as-you-go system or whatever. And that to make that work, it is necessary for the child not to have other money flowing in. Now, if they go out and earn money and want to put that into their economy, that's a different ballpark. But you will get grandparents, particularly those who maybe have retired affluently. Believe it or not, there are a few of those around. And they will undercut the system by pumping money in to the kid.
Mm-hmm.
And they see this as – and you'll say to them, knock it off. And they say, oh, we've earned the privilege to spoil our grandkids. And they literally utter the phrase to spoil
our grandkids.
Our grandkids.
Yeah.
And the term spoil comes from the idea that you're ruining them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you need to – I'm speaking to the caller now and those with a similar problem. I think you need to sit the grandparents down and say, we don't want to have our kids spoiled and be growing up to young adults who feel a sense of entitlement to money and privileges that they did not themselves earn. Please, I'm speaking to the grandparents, give our kids all the tasks you want to give them at your ranch or house or whatever. My mom has the kids clean at her house. And feel free to pay them for that, but connect it to some kind of duty.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they want to send them to volunteer somewhere, and the grandparents will endow that with some money. So it's coming from the other side. If the grandparents want to contribute, get them into that economy too and not as underminers. I so know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Good luck, Shannon. Give us a call next month and let us know how it went.
Yeah. Thank you.
Shows how multi-generational these things are.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, if you're joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about this notion of how to teach your kids to be responsible with money. Dr. West is talking about the importance of tying money to work and making that connection, helping kids learn how to contribute to an economy. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. You can also tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Let's go to Kim from Peculiar, Missouri. Kim, good morning.
Good morning. I have three teenagers, 18, 14, and just turned 13. They do have a cell phone, but they have just a little flight-out phone. They don't have a data plan because they don't need it, and they're not paying for it. And they understand that. They do get paid based on chores. You know, we have a list. This is how much it's worth. This is what you'll get paid if you do it. If you don't do it, you don't get it. And they know that, you know, if they want something, they're going to buy it. You know, like when they wanted their iPad or when they wanted their DS, they knew that, you know, I'm only going to get this much money at Christmas time. This is how much mom spends. So they went to, you know, Grandma Houston, however much you normally spend, can I have that money? This is what I'm saving it for. And they did extra chores to be able to earn, you know, to be able to combine it all and pay for those items. But they know throughout the year, if they want something, they're going to have to save the money or do extra work in order to get that item. And then I also wanted to comment, someone that was talking about screen time earlier. The way we handled that is they were allowed 30 minutes a day. That's all they got. If they wanted more time, they could read for 30 minutes, and that gave them 30 more minutes on whatever screen. If they went out, and our neighbors thought it was hilarious because we would have kids running laps in the backyard for 30 minutes so they could earn another 30 minutes on the screen.
I'm down. I love it. And I do the same thing with reading. My kids are big readers anyhow. But when Alex and I, my son, are on a trip, Alyssa, you don't have trouble getting her to read no matter what. But if he wants to play Minecraft or do some of his games on his iPad, he has to do about 50% of his screen time as reading on his Kindle on his iPad. And he is very good about that. He likes it. I haven't had to push it too hard, but I love the idea that you're balancing the dessert of fun tech with the value of reading and running and all those great things.
To keep the exercise thing going, if they read for, you know, however much time, they could not double that until they'd done the exercise also.
You must have like a complex spreadsheet that you feed all
they're all real good at keeping track of what they've done and what they know how it works. So yeah, if they would read for 30 minutes and get that turn, then go run then, because you've already read. Go run.
That's
and
great.
Good for you. Good for you, Kim.
It's interesting. It's another way of participating in an economy. It's an economy can also be a barter system. Mm-hmm. But the idea is there's a reciprocal give and take in that. I love it.
Yeah. Kim, thank you.
Thank you.
We have one listener write in about your comments about volunteering, you know, and again, tying volunteer time with money. And the listener says, isn't the whole point of volunteering to do something without thought of reward?
Yeah, I knew somebody was going to raise that question.
Yeah.
And the reason I brought that up is that it is harder now to get a job for kids who are under 16. And there used to be, in the pre-2008 era, so many open jobs in very kind of low-grade jobs that you could get a job at 14 or 15.
Mm-hmm.
That is really, really hard now, even in several years past the recession. So one way to pull both those things together, particularly if you have a grandparent who wants to give away money, is to say, I would like to endow your work at the Humane Society or something. I will give you money for you giving to the community. I agree that it mixes up the point, but it is a better workaround than a child not having an income, not learning about work, and not being able to find one of those under 16 jobs.
Let's go to Cynthia from Kansas City, Missouri, who has a question that probably a lot of folks out there are thinking about right about now. Cynthia, good morning.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 14-year-old who I'm looking to maybe do some work outside the home. I do have a few friends that own restaurants, maybe bus tables or help with car detail. But my husband's thinking I'm pushing him a little too early.
Hmm.
What age would you think is appropriate for them to start earning money outside the home?
Well, good question.
Me and Steve, we were making money when we were like 7, so we're the wrong people to
You're asking
ask.
The wrong guy here, Cynthia.
And literally, I was out mowing yards when I was 11 or 12 years old, and I think that's just fine. I do think when you're under 16, there has to be a great clarity of how many hours should be worked, especially during the school year. And I think that needs to be right down there around 10, 11 hours a week when you're under 16 at the most, and those usually must be on weekends. The older you get, if you can manage your time better, then that as long as you're in school, that can get up to 15, 18 hours a week. And in the summer, as many hours as you are, you know, able to do and feel comfortable with, 25, 20, et cetera. But I don't think – I think there's rarely a problem with kids working if it doesn't take away from other activities. And too often I think we expect the kids are balancing work and school, and they really may be balancing work against how much video game time they have.
Hmm.
So I would weigh all those variables in as you and your husband figured out. In general, I would side with you on that. Be sure to tell him I said that.
I appreciate it. But I'm thinking, yeah, I was out there at 12 myself.
Yeah.
So
unless you're in a dangerous situation or it's distracting from other good things in adolescence, it's rarely a problem.
Cynthia, thank you.
Thank you.
A follow-up here. Jane wrote this about kids working. It's difficult to teach kids about money when they don't have time to work. My daughter is a straight-A student in honors classes who plays a musical instrument and two sports. While we have tried to get her to cut back on her activities, we have been unsuccessful. So she's doing some good stuff, you know, and the time, understandably, is lacking.
Yeah, and this gets us into a whole other area. This is a person who I would, without knowing anything else, there may be other mitigating factors, I would suggest the budget for. And if she's working, if her full-time job is school and preparing for college perhaps, then that's perfectly worthwhile for a parent to reinforce as the primary, let's call it a job, school is the job. But in that case, to get her participating in the economy, I would have her on a monthly budget. And she then can get her clothes from that and so on. And I sure wouldn't ever do any of these things as a punishment. You want to be careful not to say you're on a budget as a way to spank somebody. That it should be a part of growing up and learning.
Chris from Lee Summit. Chris, good morning.
Good morning. Great show. I love the concepts. And actually, you know, they've been around a long time and, you know, various generations pick them back up again.
True.
I've owned Pete and Repeat in Kansas City, which is a consignment store, for 28 years. And I see it at the counter every day. There are people who come in with their kids, and especially, you know, that sweet spot that I call the 11 to 14s. And they are earning their money either through chores or whatever. And they come in and they have a sensitivity of how they really want a particular brand because their kids have it, but their budget doesn't allow them to go to Macy's. And so, you know, they are proactively seeking out the alternatives to make their budgets work and learning this at 11 years old. The enthusiasm at the counter is remarkable, and it's different. It's completely different. The kids that stand off to the side with their eyes kind of rolled up to the ceiling and looking around distracted, you know, those are the kids that are getting everything bought for them.
I totally get what you mean here. I totally get what you're saying. Yeah.
And they're the ones that, you know, kind of have that attitude that is like, oh, man, we're in a resale shop.
Yeah.
When I could go to Macy's. Versus the kids that are up there and they're showing me, oh, this is a Justice and I love this. My best friend has a Justice in purple and look at this. I'm getting it for $10 or whatever. You know, and the enthusiasm and the attitude of the kids, the respect to their parents, the respect to me as the shop owner. I mean, it's night and day. So I found the other side of this counter of economy can tell you that there are benefits to this that far simply understanding the value of a dollar. It understands, you know, community respect and I don't know, it's huge.
Chris, thank you. Yeah.
I totally agree. This goes way beyond the small issues of an economy and go to the macro issues of how we engage with each other and how we choose to use our resources. And I think she gave a good example. In the book, I give in the new book, I always want to be where I'm not. I give an example of my son Alex going to the Mall of America, and I explain how he had to learn to shop there. And he's a pretty voracious consumer. And the one little secret in there is he had to wait until the last day to buy anything. He could shop as much as he wanted only on the last day. Why did I do that? Delay the decision, slow the decision down, think about what you're doing. And my gosh, it looked like torture. Here he is looking at this one thing and he's putting it, how do I decide? And you can just see the suffering going on in him. He'd put one thing on the shelf and he would look at the other. That's teaching an important economic lesson, just like the one you mentioned.
You know, Wes, what about the post-high school deal? Yeah. You know, how should families spend money, save for college, you know, in a way that furthers this idea of their kids who, you know, wind up participating in some kind of economy?
Well, we had such good calls and went the direction they went. We didn't get enough time for this. We may have to come back and visit it later on because it's its own special thing. I have strongly, from working with college students in a university town, strongly come to realize that there are serious shortcomings in fully endowing an education, whether it be through government funding or personal funding, and that kids need to have a copay. We call it in health insurance. They copay everything. And if that copay is $300 a semester. I don't care if that's all it is.
They want, you want some buy-in.
Right, buy-in. It's literally buy-in. They have to be able to see their name on a check, and maybe they just buy their books, mm-hmm. which is horrible enough as it mm-hmm. is. 300 maybe get you one. Or something that they are doing so when they wake up in the morning inevitably and look at the clock and they consider whether to touch the snooze button, they can cognitively override their thinking and say, oh, my God, I paid $800 for this. Do I really want to sleep through it? And if they don't have any such connection to that money, it's a lot easier to hit snooze.
Absolutely. Well, Wes, always a good conversation. Thanks for taking some time. Always good to have you, Wes.
I will look forward to seeing you again, sir.
We'll see you next month, and we'll talk about ADHD, right?
A lot. Some ADD. Of what we talked about it today will show up a little again, too.
Wes Crenshaw is a psychologist. He's based in Lawrence. He's the co-author of the Double Take Advice column. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Cody Newell. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.